Okay, thank you. Good evening, everybody. It is Tuesday, February 9th, 2021, and this is a work session for the City and Borough of Grand Alaska at 6 p.m. And tonight, our work session is going to be a discussion and presentation on the general fund budget projections year end fiscal year 2021 and planning for fiscal year 2022. Lisa, I know you've been working diligently at this, so please walk us through.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm actually going to share my screen because I've got a PowerPoint presentation here.
Kim, did you want to call roll on this? I didn't see that. Do you want roll?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that just to show that there was a quorum.
Yep, sounds good. Let's call roll, please.
Okay, Assembly Members Morrison.
Here.
Ryan Howe. He told me he was going to be late. So Dalrymple.
Here.
David Powell.
Here.
Corson.
Here.
Gilbert.
Here.
And Mayor Prasanka.
Here. Thanks, Kim.
Thanks.
Mr. Mayor, can everybody see my screen?
Yes.
Certainly up on mine. Yep. Looks good.
Okay, great. So I'm going to go ahead and get started, if that's okay.
Please take it away. Thanks, Lisa.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk you through the projected revenue shortfalls for FY 2021. And these revenue shortfalls are, if we cut off the amount of revenue that had been taken in today and no more revenue was taken in this account for this revenue source the rest of this fiscal year. So these are extremely conservative projections. So as you can see in the police department, $17,000 was budgeted for fines and forfeitures. We're at 4075. For police services, we're tracking okay. But for DMV services, obviously, we are way off the money because of COVID-19 and because of the DMV closures and the lack of traffic in through there. So if we were to shut off things today, we would be short in the police department revenue in the general fund by $100,000. Going on to the Nolan Center, we're going to go through the three different aspects of the Nolan Center. So this is the museum. Donations, we're actually tracking over 50%. Admissions, you can see we're at a negligible amount here. We had budgeted 20,000 and we've taken in 434. For merchandise sales in the gift shop, things have started to pick up thanks to our ability to open the facility back up and to Cindy's efforts to get stuff out online. But we're still going to fall probably well short of the mark. Again, if no more revenue were taken in this year, this fiscal year, we would be short about $60,000, just over $60,000. In the Civic Center, facility rental was budgeted at $10,000. Of course, there's been almost no facility rental this year. We're at 1166. If there were no more activities in the Nolan Center the rest of the year, the shortfall would be $8,800. In the theater, we had budgeted $70,000, $35,000 for movie tickets and $35,000 for concessions. We've been running movies, but the problem is they're old movies, and so you can't really charge for them. So there's been almost no admission fees. And concessions are as well as can be expected given the participation in movies. So the shortfall in the theater is roughly just over $65,000. In parks and recreation in the pool, the pool is actually doing pretty well. They're tracking just shy of 50% of what admissions would be for the pool and the workout area. So that's actually pretty good. But merchandise concessions, facility rental, fee assistance and miscellaneous grant revenue is negligible. So if we were to cut off revenue today, again, if we took in nothing more, we'd be just over $28,000 shy. For parks, we budgeted $4,000 for facility rental, and smartly, we've budgeted nothing for RV park fees, given the fact that we didn't think anybody would be coming. And so if no more revenue came in this year at all, we'd be down about almost $4,000. For the recreation side of things, obviously this is for program fees. We're down considerably. We budgeted 14.2. We budgeted $5,000 for facility rental and $1,000 for equipment rental. The amount of revenue is negligible. Although Kate and Lucy have been doing things in alternative ways, it's still not the same as the kids coming in for the programming. So we, if revenue were cut off today and we took in no more money, it'd be just over $19,000. And in the cemetery, we are tracking okay, but we're gonna be shy. If there is no more activity in the cemetery this year, we're gonna be shy almost $3,000. And all of these things add up. So this was to pull out specific departments. And I wanna clarify that although the Nolan Center and Parks and Rec are both special revenue funds, they do not cover their own costs. And so they are supplemented, they're underwritten by contributions from the general fund, which is why they're lumped in here.
Lisa,
yes.
A quick question. I know that when we were creating our budget, our budget was built in a COVID environment. So the question I have is, how does this compare to previous budgets? Like, do we have, like, because we put in less money and we're revenue and we're not making the less revenue mark, correct?
So Mr. Mayor, I actually cannot answer that question appropriately. I'm gonna need to look. Let me.
No, it's fine. If you could get that for me, please don't stop your presentation.
Okay.
I'm not, I get it that by budget actual, these numbers, this is where we're at. But what I'm also curious about is, where are we at in comparative to non-COVID years? Because it could be a lot more dramatic than it appears right now. So if we would normally take in $80,000 in movie revenue, and this year we said we were going to take in $30,000 in movie revenue, and we took in $28, you know, it's even more dramatic based on an actual year.
That's fair, Mr. Mayor, and we can get to that. We can provide that to the assembly. So I just want to go over the department summaries. So police, 100,000 short. Nolan Center, 134. Parks and Rec, almost 52. Cemetery, almost 3, for a grand total shortfall of 289,081. That is, again, if we took in no more revenue in these two remaining quarters of the fiscal year. So as I said, it's a very conservative approach. These are the remaining revenue accounts in the general fund. This includes property taxes, which we're ahead of the game. It includes sales tax, it includes PILT, it includes everything else. If I take the shortfall that we have right now, the difference between what is budgeted and what we have year to date, the amount's just over $500,000 down here at the bottom. What we are anticipating to come in yet, and which I would consider to be fairly well guaranteed, that's because it's the second half of the jail rent, which is $186,000, the second half of the court rent, which is $31,200, the second half of 911 charges, which is, you know, almost $20,000, and so on. We are darn near 100% certain we're gonna make up $473,000 of that, which leaves a delta of just over $36,000. So if you add that to the 289 from the previous departments, you get a grand total revenue, potential revenue shortfall of $325,351, which is significant. It's significant. What I wanna bring your attention to is, for this year, we have a budget surplus for FY 2021 of $436,637 based on our CARES Act salary offsets. We budgeted to take in $890,000 in general fund revenue from CARES Act. And we actually have far surpassed that. It's almost $1 million. And part of that is because some of the wages weren't budgeted, like Jamie Roberts weren't budgeted because we couldn't for reasons I won't get into. But so if you take that budget surplus that we said we would have, and you subtract the revenue shortfall from it, that actually leaves us still with an FY21 surplus of just over $111,000. So we're still in the black. Now, if we were to have something significant go on where, and that is based on, that's based on our expenditures tracking exactly where we need them to be or a little bit less. And so far, with a couple of minor exceptions that I think are going to be absorbed into the budget, everything is tracking about on par for expenditures with our general fund, with our general fund and our special revenue funds of Nolan Center and Parks and Rec. So this year-end projection is also based on us making up the additional sales tax salary that we are short in the general fund right now. So given the revenue that's come in the first two quarters of the fiscal year, we have $162,810 in sales tax we need to break even on our projection for this year. So now I want to go over the sales tax scenarios with you. So in the first quarter of March 2020, we took in $606,000, just over $606,000. Jumping over here to the second quarter of 2020, and I'm talking now in a calendar year, we took in $755,294. The reason I'm giving you these two quarters is because these are the equivalent quarters from 2020 that we are getting ready to take in revenue from in 2021. We take 68% of our sales tax revenue and apply that as revenue into the general fund. So the equivalent of that is for the upcoming quarter, just over $412,000. And for the next quarter is $513,000. If you were to slash that in half, meaning if we only took in 50% of what we took in the equivalent quarters of last year, the amounts are $206,000 and $256,000, just over almost $257,000 respectively. So as I said earlier, we budgeted this year a total of $1,283,840 in sales tax revenue in the general fund. Our year-to-date actual is 1.121 for a difference of 162,810. As you can see, if we only do 50% of what we did in last year's first quarter, last year's quarter ending March 31st, we will surpass what our goal is, what we budgeted for this year in sales tax. If we only do 50% of the next quarter, we will well surpass what we budgeted in sales tax for this year. So we have the potential. This is what's remaining to be that we have to make up in this year's budget. If we take in the same as what we took in last year in the quarters ending March 31st and June 30th, we will see, instead of $162,000, $926,000. If we only give 50% of that, we'll see $463,000. So here's the general fund year-end projection. If we make back this $162,810 that we believe we will without much issue, and we have the $111,000 surplus, this is where we'll end up for the year. If we take in $926,000, which is the same as what we took in FY20, and I'm not suggesting we will, and we have this surplus, this is where we'll end up for the year. If we take in 50% of what we took in FY20, this is where we'll end up for the year. So this is a much better situation than we anticipated we would be in, given the scenario. And really, all of this is because of CARES Act funding. And this paints a really great picture for FY21, but I need to caution you for FY22. So, Mr. Mayor, are there any questions for FY21?
Anybody have questions? You can just speak up for assembly members. Patty, do you have one?
Yeah, when you're talking sales tax, are you talking just local or are you talking the totality?
That's the totality. So that includes our local sales tax on both commercial businesses and city services and the revenue coming in from the remote sellers sales tax.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Anyone else? Questions? Sounded pretty quiet, Lisa. I think you're ready to move on.
Okay, so as we move through into planning for next year, all of these surpluses sound really fantastic. So we have to start with this year's budget to understand where we're going to be for next year's start. So as I said, we budgeted $890,000 in CARES Act offsets, and that gave us a budget surplus of just over $436,000. The deficit we would have had for FY21 without CARES Act funding would have been $453,000. So that's where we have to start. If we budgeted the same amount of expenditures and the same amount of revenues as we did this year in FY21 for 22, we will have, because we don't have any CARES Act money, we will have a $453,000 starting deficit. I also took a look at all of the revenues that you saw FY21, and I projected a decline for those. And I projected that we would take in not as little money as I projected we would take in for FY21, but I projected we would take in far less than we normally would in those areas. And so my projections for the declining department revenues is $214,200 and other declining revenues is $36,270. So the starting deficit assumption for next year is $703,000, just almost $704,000. Now that deficit is based on the same sales tax revenue that we budgeted for FY2021, which is $1,283,840. So in order for us to plan for sales tax, I took a look at all of the quarters for the calendar year of 2020, which spans two different fiscal years. So for the quarter ending September 30th in 2020, we took in $837,131. Quarter ending December 31st, it was $811,443. March 31st, $412,449. And for the quarter ending June 30, it was just over $513,000 for a total of almost $2.6 million. Now, these are total sales tax revenues, again, and only 68% of that goes into the general fund. So if we take the numbers from 2020 that span two different fiscal years, but that's what we have to use as a projection. And I would say all of these, with the exception of the quarter ending March 31st, were quarters in which we were in the middle of the pandemic. If we took in only 75% of that, these are the numbers, and we'd come up with 1.9 million and change. If we only took in 50% of what we took in 2020, the amount of tax revenue we would get in totality is almost 1.3 million. What we budgeted in the general fund was 1.283 million. And again, these are totals for sales tax, not the 68%. This 1.283 represents the 68%. So projected sales tax at the 2020 level, at the 68% for the general fund would be 1.75. You have to reduce the amount of our, because I factored in the budget deficit based on the 1.2 million we budgeted for FY21. You have to subtract that from the 1.7. Then you have to decrease, then you have to subtract the declining revenue number that I provided, and you have to subtract the starting deficit based on the lack of CARES Act money. So if we have the if we have the 2020 level of sales tax revenue, we will have a deficit of almost $237,000 for FY22 if we make no changes to our expenditures, and we do not, and we're not able to see any revenue changes here. If we get 75% of what came in 2020, this will be the 68% revenue that goes into the general fund. You subtract the 1.28 million from that. You subtract the declining revenue amount that I came up with, and you subtract the beginning deficit, and we have a shortfall of almost $675,000. If we only take in 50% of what we took in 2020, at 68% for the general fund, we only have $875,000 in tax revenue. That leaves us a gap here of $408,000. You take the declining revenue and you take the starting deficit, and we have a budget gap of 1.521. So I'm going to guess that we are not going to be at 50% of 2020 level taxes. This is what I would consider to be an absolute beyond worst case scenario. And the reason I say that is because FY20 was almost all of it. The revenue we took in was during the pandemic. So I feel like it's reasonable that we would have a level that is somewhat similar or a bit reduced. But those are discussions we can have. These deficits are based on expenditure levels remaining the same as they were for FY21 budgeted amounts. So that's the starting projection for FY22. Now, one of the things that I have talked about in a number of different occasions is the loss of community revenue sharing or community assistance. We took in $375,000 this year in community assistance. And because that fund, the recapitalization of that fund was struck by the governor, I anticipated that was going to be reduced by a third in this upcoming fiscal year. I got confirmation from AML that reduction, if the recapitalization doesn't happen, will not start until FY23. So we have one more year of reprieve with regard to revenue sharing. But in FY23, that'll be an additional reduction of general fund revenue of about $125,000. And if the recapitalization is gone forever, then it'll be, we will have FY23, 24, and 25, and then revenue sharing will be gone. And so that will be something that will have to be made up. But I just want to make sure that you guys didn't think I had forgotten it in these projections, because I've talked a number of times about how we were going to lose that money. This also assumes level revenues for the jail contract, level revenues for the court lease, level revenues for 911, and a handful of other smaller things. So that's it in a nutshell. I'm gonna try to get rid of my screen share here.
And can we open it up to questions, or do you have more for us, Lisa?
No, Mr. Mayor, that's all I've got right now.
Does anybody have any questions for Lisa? I'm afraid I can't see hands right now. So if folks just want to speak up.
I guess the long and the short of it is, Mr. Mayor, I believe that we will be squarely in the black for FY21, the closeout of FY21. But we will, we have a fair hurdle in front of us for FY22, at the very least, probably about $250,000 shortfall to try to take care of.
Right. Anybody questions? I've got it up now, so if you want to stick your hand up, you can.
Lisa? I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor.
No, I was just saying I'm not seeing anything, so. Please go ahead.
I think that's all I've got. I thought there would be a lot of questions, so.
Well, I think it's a lot to take in, for one thing, and you've done a nice job of laying it out, but I think folks may need a little bit of time to digest. You know, from my perspective, I'm pleased that we did so well, but we did well, basically, like a lot of fishermen did well this year. They did well because of external funding sources, not their business. And that may not last. And I don't know if you're hearing much in the way of what the relief packages are looking like on a federal level, Lisa, but it makes me nervous that we were able to salvage and actually do fairly well based on federal dollars. And you don't want to become, you don't want to base your budgets on that happening again.
No, Mr. Mayor, we may get a reprieve with the next, funding package out of Washington. But again, that creates a false sense of security because that money's going to be there maybe for FY22, mm-hmm. but it's certainly not going to be there for FY23 or FY24. Now, at some point, the hope is that the economy is going to rebound because we're, you know, over the course of a couple of years that we will be able to see the return of cruising to a far more robust level. The hope is that the fishing industry, you know, the fishing will rebound as well. We don't know. And so, you know, there is hope, but we have to be very careful about these things. Because you can't base a budget on hope, you've got to base it on reality or realistic projections anyway, and plan for the worst and hope for the best. The other thing that I have to add, and the Assembly is well aware of this, is that we have a vast amount of capital project outlay that's coming up, not the least of which is the public safety building. And you know, the governor has issued a bill, I think it's Senate Bill 74, that is the GO bond package. It does not include anything for specific municipalities other than items that would have been funded under grant programs from the state that have been stricken, like school bond debt, the Department of Education maintenance list. There are a couple of projects that would have qualified under the Municipal Harbor Matching Grant. But the ability for municipalities to put projects on that list has not happened yet. And I participated in, so Southeast Conference is going on right now. The mid-session summit is happening remotely. And I listened in on the panel of members of the Senate today that included, Senator Stedman, Senator Von Imhoff from Anchorage, Senator Keel, Jesse Keel from Juneau, and who am I missing? I'm missing one other, I apologize. But I had an opportunity, Senator Machicki, the House, the President of the Senate, who's from the Kenai Peninsula. And there are varying degrees of opinion on things, but one item that I want to impress upon you, and if I talk about it now, I may repeat it just briefly during the meeting under the legislative update. There is finally a recognition that there have to be revenue sources. The and revenue sources is code for tax. Mm-hmm. everybody realizes that we are getting starting to get into the corpus of the permanent fund, and that's not something that can happen. And the budget is not going to be balanced on the budget is not going to be balanced without some sort of revenue sources. There is far, far, far more support in the legislature for a sales tax than there is a income tax.
Really? And,
yes.
That's interesting to me.
Right. And I think a lot of that is because of the greater Anchorage area. They don't have a sales tax right now, and they see all these visitors coming through. And I think there's the assumption that it's going to be far more beneficial to tax everybody that's visiting the state or would normally be visiting the state under regular travel conditions than to do an income tax. Well, that's not necessarily the case. And what I know, I don't have the documentation on this yet, but Nils Andreessen from AML has done a review, and a sales tax it impacts Southeast communities more than it does mm-hmm. other communities in the state. And the good news is there are other areas of the state that have sales tax. The entire Kenai Peninsula has sales tax. Parts of the Matsu Valley have sales tax. And so there are some population centers that can help with Southeast in terms of suggesting concerns about a sales tax rather than an income tax. Although the mayor and I had a brief conversation about this a couple of days ago, and there are some potential, there may be some potential benefits to us by thinking about things in a different way. What is being thrown out in terms of generating about $1 billion of revenue is a 4% sales tax with no exemptions and no cap. So basically, everything has a 4% sales tax on it. The concern for all of us that have local sales taxes is if the state does or does not have any exemptions or have any cap, it becomes almost an untenuous situation for local vendors to be able to deal with these different structures. So will we at a municipal level be forced to do whatever the state does or does not do? This is where the mayor actually had a good idea, and that is if the state comes in with a 4% statewide sales tax and says there's no exemption and there's no cap, does that then mean that Wrangell has the ability to lower our sales tax but take advantage of the no exemption and no cap policy? Because if we have many, many exemptions and we have a cap. So if we get rid of that and we tax everything at the 100% level, can we lower our sales tax? So rather than having a 7% local sales tax and a 4% state for a total of 11, where Wrangell has all these sort of random exemptions, is it just, let's say, an 8% sales tax or a 6% sales tax? Because we're able to lower ours so much because we are able to tax on the, you know, so much more value of what's being sold. I don't know. So those are all of the things that need to be discussed. I will tell you at the AML level, there is a lot of push for AML to come out against a statewide sales tax and for the municipalities to recommend an income tax. And the Kenai Peninsula municipalities got together last week and had an initial conversation about that. I was just emailing actually with the deputy city manager in Juneau a couple of days ago and suggested that the Southeast municipalities do the same. And she thought that would be a very good idea. So that's something we should probably come together with. But we as a community need to have this conversation. Assemblymember Gilbert has been talking about this for 2 years at least. Mm-hmm. Assemblymember Gilbert has also suggested we even do some sort of an informal poll to ask. I do have a copy of a slideshow that was presented early in the week by an individual at an AML meeting via Zoom that talks about the differences between a sales tax and an income tax. And there are a couple of different ways that you can do an income tax. One is the adjusted gross income, and I'm not thinking of what the other one is based on your federal income tax. Payment. But what happens is because people who earn more pay more in an income tax scenario. The vast majority of people pay less in an income tax scenario than they do in a sales tax scenario, even though the same amount of money is being generated. I know that sounds ridiculous, but when you have, when you've got vast income disparity, you know, the, again, the upper wage earners pay more. So I did hear President Michicki today said he believes it needs to be, what did he call the approach? I think he called it the all-in approach, which is in order to bridge the budget gap, it's a lower PFD, some cuts to some continued cuts to state stuff, a sales tax, and increases in industry taxes like oil and gas taxes. I heard Natasha von Imhoff from Anchorage say it's not an either or income tax or sales tax or oil and gas tax. It's got to be all three. So there's a lot going on. And what happens in the legislature is going to have a direct result on where we go in terms of our revenue. So I'm making these revenue projections based on the fact that Wrangell's going to have a 7% uninterrupted sales tax. And by uninterrupted, I mean there's not going to be other forces at work. So when these other forces come in, I don't know what that's going to mean for us. It's very, you know, I use the term squishy a lot. It's not squishy. It's, you know, it's sort of chaos, kind of.
Well, one of the issues is that there's unintended consequences of the various tax schemes. So, for example, if you have an income tax and it's not structured correctly, you can actually have people move out of state but work in state, and then they pay state taxes in their home state. So if you're, you know, you pick the state that you pay the lowest taxes on, so then you lose those taxpayers and house owners and local.
We have that now, Mr. Mayor, with everybody that works on the slope.
Sure. And a sales tax can force people to start shopping down south and pay your Washington sales tax and then import into the state. So it's a tricky thing, but I appreciate that at least they're looking at revenue.
Well, yeah, it only took them spending $16 billion of the constitutional budget reserve and now getting into the corpus of the permanent fund to realize, well, maybe revenue is a good idea.
Did they mention anything about turning the homestead exemption over to the municipalities and boroughs? Because with a state income tax, that to my mind always brings in the possibility of a means test for other taxations. That would be an easy way for a borough to incorporate this state income tax as a means test for other taxes.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point, Assemblymember Gilbert. Do you want to explain what you mean by means, meaning financial means?
I'm afraid of that state income tax. Because I could see municipalities using the state income tax, using that information to reduce the homestead exemption for the elders. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the legislature is going to turn that over to municipalities one of these years. Because as revenue sharing decreases, community assistance decreases from the state, they're going to open up the floodgates, and that's going to be a problem for municipalities to deal with.
Are you talking about the property tax exemption program?
The senior citizen property tax.
Yes.
Because that became an unfunded mandate at some point. They cut it back and back and back till it became an unfunded mandate and strapped our community with.
I know.
What is it, about $1 million, Lisa?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I apologize that I don't have that number off the top of my head. I should. I will tell you that it impacts Wrangell far greater because we have the largest number of seniors per capita of any community in the state. So we are unfairly burdened by that mandate.
So conversely though, if that were to be done away with, it would also affect Wrangell. I mean, because of the number of people that qualify for that exemption.
If it were to go away, it would positively right. impact Wrangell. And although we're not calling for it to go away in our legislative priorities, we certainly ask that it be turned over to the municipality so that in lean years, we have the ability to give a greater exemption. But in years mm-hmm. where we are in good shape, we can give a greater exemption. In years where we're lean, you know, potentially we would back off on what that exemption is. And although that doesn't allow folks with a fixed income to plan necessarily, it helps the municipality because the offset of that is increased fees, et cetera.
And then it could also, you know, to Assemblymember Gilbert's point, it can impact the municipality because you can actually run out seniors who will move over to communities that offer senior exemptions. So
correct.
You know,
right.
For
so it's a double-edged sword.
It's a double-edged sword. So then you run out folks who potentially, you know, are contributing to your local economy by doing away with it. So you'd have to really weigh it up. The appropriate thing would be for the state to come back and fund the damn thing, but that's never going to happen. So
No. And Representative Ortiz was offering again a community survey and on suggestions of garnering revenue for the state. I wonder if we could piggyback off his survey or at least contact him to see what Wrangell citizens prefer. A state income tax or a state sales tax?
I think he'd be very open to that. He's just dying for input when I spoke to him. So that would be, we should reach out to him and see if we can piggyback.
Mm-hmm.
But we are the second or third oldest community in the state by, you know, for our population. So our tax rolls are swelled. Our property tax rolls are swelled with senior citizens who all receive the exemption. And to Assemblymember Gilbert's point, that if you applied a means test, a lot of those folks would not, you know, if you set a reasonable means test, a lot of folks would not qualify. And as soon as you have a state income tax, you can do that. That's the point that Patty's making.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a tough one. It's a tough one.
So I guess we squirreled out a little bit on that because it's a taxation issue that's going to impact us here in Wrangell and potentially have implications for the community and for our budget. But the long and short of the work session is, I believe we're going to be in the black, squarely in the black for FY 21, so long as we don't have anything critical happen. But we will not be so fortunate for FY 22, and we're going to have to plan accordingly for that. And we will come back, administration will come back with some recommendations as to the final planning assumptions that we use so that the assembly can say thumbs up or thumbs down with those planning assumptions, that you're comfortable with that or you're not, as we move forward. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, we've got things like the public safety building coming up. And if this GO bond bill does not accommodate something like that, then we're going to be on the hook for that, those improvements on our own. And if we do the whole package in one time, this is just a for instance, the whole package renovation at $9.5 million, the bonded indebtedness on that annually requires the equivalent of a 4 mil property tax increase. So not only are we in a deficit for our operating, the things that the general fund needs to pay for, like the improvements to the public safety building, are going to drive the equivalent of a significant increase in taxes. And so I need everybody to be mindful that although it looks rosy right now for FY 21, that's not the projection moving forward unless we see, you know, a return to the glory days sort of tax revenue coming in. And although we may, it's going to be a slow progression over a number of years. It's not going to be a dramatic increase.
The other thing too, and I'm just going to say this because I'm seeing it before my very eyes, these variants of COVID that are coming through could throw a wrench at us at any moment. That, you know, they're nervous about the vaccine responding appropriately to the various variants. We have the Brazilian, we have the Californian, we have Great Britain, we have an African, and now there's one, I think, out of Eastern Canada. So we're not out of the woods yet. And so I'm extremely cautious in my optimism about us moving quickly ahead. I wish I felt more optimistic about that, but I think we really need to be cautious. I heard one person on the news say that it could be 2 years until international travel is back to where it was, just because of the various shutdowns and lockdowns that our countries are going through, which impacts our tourism. You know, the international travel market is very important to Alaska's tourism. And then on top of that, we have all kinds of issues with the current administration is moving away from fossil fuels, and we've had GM just come through with the green initiative for all of its cars by a certain date, and the decrease in demand for oil. And what does that do?
Exxon was just removed from the S&P 500.
You're kidding.
It's wow. I'm in an oil province right now. This place is drying up. They have 35% occupancy downtown. So it's bad, and we need to be cautious and make sure that we're growing our economy in a way that sort of foolproofs us to some of this stuff. Because if we feel flush and we spend it, we could be in trouble down the road.
Well, I really came tonight prepared for really, really bad news. And I cannot believe that I can believe we're in the black for FY21, but for FY22, only 250,000 in the red. Didn't we put 900,000 plus in salaries from CARES into our budget?
We did, but Assemblymember Gilbert, so we budgeted a severe loss this year, or a severe reduction, like almost 50% in sales tax revenue. And thankfully, what has materialized is far greater than that. And so if you look back at the sales tax revenue that has come in over the course of the calendar year 2020, which almost all of those quarters were during the pandemic, if you base the budget on those numbers with no reduction, because there's such an increase in the amount of sales tax revenue compared to what we budgeted for this year, it's only a couple hundred, you know, just a $250,000 or $260,000 deficit. Now, if we don't take in that amount of money in sales tax, then the deficit grows. So.
And the remote seller sales tax that we're collecting helped quite a bit.
It has. We've just this fiscal year alone, that's been an increase of just over $60,000.
Yeah. And we were hoping 300,000, correct?
Well, yeah, but stuff continues to grow. The difference that we took in between last year and this year, in terms of remote seller, even though we weren't calling it remote seller last year, was $10,000 in December alone.
Right.
So.
What's interesting is that with the increase in remote seller tax, I'd be curious to know what percentage is represented by our ability to capture that. So that would be the new vendors that we captured through the state program versus Amazon, who's been remitting to us for a while. And what percentage of that is actually people buying outside of town and the impact on our local businesses through those businesses?
So as a reminder, Amazon is still remitting to us separately.
I understand that. Okay. I appreciate that. So, but it was just, if we take a look year over year, are people doing more purchases through the internet and people sellers?
So yes, when we compare last December to this December, it the vast majority of it was one seller. I can't report who that was, but the vast majority of it. This year, because Amazon is remitting to us separately, that's all I would can say, that $25,000 is all new revenue from different sellers. Almost all of it's new revenue from sellers who were not captured last year.
Well, a question I have on that remote sales tax collection, if the state does go with the state sales tax, is the agency going to collect that amount, that state sales amount, and not top off with our 7% or whatever we come up with?
I don't know what the... None of that's been discussed yet, to my knowledge.
Because I think the way I read that agreement was it was predicated upon the idea that the state doesn't have a sales tax. So it was individual. And now I'm wondering if it would we see a decrease in sales tax remittance to the city?
I don't know the answer to that.
You're right, Patty. I just remembered that. It does say that if there's a state sales tax, because then the state, do you remember that, David?
Yeah.
You're right.
So
that could impact us.
Yeah, it could.
Unless we remove exemptions in the cap, like Lisa was talking about, right?
Right.
There's a way that you could do that, but you'd want to be really cautious, Ryan. I think
I'm not a dictator yet. So
right. You'd want to take and make it kind of match up, you know, with your overall sales. But one of the things that might capture is some of the larger sales that go uncaptured and packaging sales, which we don't capture anything from. So it would be interesting to see how it all pencils out, but you'd want it to kind of, you know, you don't want it to be an absolute landslide for the coffers of the city and hurt people, because that will drive business out.
No, I for one am happy to take good news at face value. Thank you, Lisa. I think there's bad news if you want to find it, but today it's very good.
Yeah, it's more, let's put it this way, it's more stable actually than I had anticipated when I started the exercise looking at stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm pleased with that.
I am just, it's always interesting with Anchorage and Fairbanks never put in their own sales tax, and now they're all for it. You know, the rail belt instead of an income tax. Well,
sales tax, it really impacts people who have to spend all their money
to live.
Like, it really hurts people who If you have it in your mouth, it's terrible.
It disproportionately impacts people on the lower wage earning end of the scale, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else? Any comments? Lisa, any final thoughts?
No, that's it, Mr. Mayor. Just we'll begin, work toward figuring out how to have a balanced budget for FY22. And we will continue to monitor what's going on with FY21 to make sure that, you know, some anomaly or something doesn't happen to change what we have projected.
I have a quick question. I know we had at one time talked about doing a biannual or a two-year budget. Do you see any advantage in approaching that this way now with things as volatile as they are?
No. Mr. Mayor, if I may respond to Assemblymember Morrison.
Yes, please.
Yeah, the two-year budget in this sort of a situation, in my opinion, is sort of out the window. I mean,
right.
There's always value in looking for, and one of the goals that I'll be bringing back to you is a sustainable budget plan into the future. But it's hard enough to anticipate what our revenue is going to be given a quarterly sales tax return in this, rather than knowing monthly what's going on. So I'm concerned about setting a budget for a couple of years. Projecting out, I think we absolutely need right. to be doing that. But setting that budget at this time, I'm not necessarily as comfortable with that as I was, you know, this same time last year.
Okay, any other thoughts?
And our last meeting of the month, we'll get an accounts receivable and bad debt report.
Yes.
So we know where we are.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Lisa, for your hard work there. Appreciate it very much. If you could arrange to have sort of a 3 to 5 year comparative so that we can see how far we're off, because we have to remember we budgeted lower because we were in the throes of COVID and we knew it was going to be bad. So I'd like to sort of compare year over year versus just to a COVID year. But otherwise, appreciate your hard work on this. We will adjourn the work session here and come back for our regular assembly meeting at 7 p.m. So we'll take a break right now. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.